inconceivable!
Will you please act like you have more than a two-word vocabulary?
Is there air? You don't know!
And now, a yak.
Yak?
Hey, don't touch that dial. You found Secular Yakking.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Amy.
After years.
Many years of yakking at each other.
We're here to yak at you.
So sit back and enjoy the yakking.
Welcome back, yakkers. I hope you had a wonderful 2 weeks.
Has it been? Oh, yeah, it has been 2 weeks.
Yeah, we had some technical issues on the last show, and I just couldn't quite get it out.
Yeah, that's how the dice rolls, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what happens when you try and record 8,000 miles apart.
Yeah, it makes just a little bit difficult sometimes.
Anyways, it's full-on winter here, and it's full-on cold here.
Yeah, I bet.
So yeah, my eyeballs froze this morning, but that's okay.
Like your actual eyeballs, not your eyelashes?
No, I felt like my eyeballs were freezing because the wind was strong and my eyes were watering, and they kind of froze.
Do you know what your temperatures were?
Negative 31 with a wind chill of negative 62.
That's a bit chilly.
Yeah, we were doing the McMurdo Mile for midwinter, and I was doing the shuttle, but I was outside encouraging the folks as they ran by. So I was outside for about 15 minutes, and yeah, that's cold.
Yeah, I imagine 15 minutes out in those temperatures feels a whole lot longer.
Yeah. Anyways, that's enough Antarctica.
Yep, time for the show now.
Well, we do have some new Twitterers this time.
Okie dokie.
So we've got Brian Schwimmer, Tyler Bourbon, Rob Davey, and Megan O. So, cool.
Yay.
We have four Twitterers. And
hey,
we're
pretty good.
Yeah. And where would they go to follow us on Twitter?
At Secular Yakking.
Good, good. I think you finally have it without any problems.
Yep. Yep, I got it down, and I was going to say, how long did it take me to get it?
All right, I do have lots of news and lots of interesting things to talk about.
All righty, let's go.
So, first one, I guess we'll just get right into it.
Okay.
My arch nemesis has returned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought he'd been vanquished, but never want to back down from a fight. Republican Roy Moore is facing a wall of GOP opposition that includes President Trump, as he launches another U.S. Senate bid, testing whether he can overcome the sexual misconduct allegations that helped derail his last run.
Boy, this guy just doesn't go away. He's like a cockroach.
Yeah. Moore was twice removed as Alabama's Chief Justice for disciplinary reasons, took on national Republican leaders and others in announcing his 2020 campaign on Thursday. He says, "People in Alabama are not only angry, they are going to act on that anger. They want Washington and other people outside the state out of this election." And he blamed the 2017 loss to Democrat Jones on fraud.
So he basically thinks Alabama's its own country then.
Oh, he always has.
Yep.
Yeah, he is our perpetual Potter.
I was going to say, he's been our Potter. He's just been a pain in our butt, really.
Yeah. And despite allegations that he made sexual advances on young women decades ago, Moore cast himself as a righteous servant who evokes fear inside the Beltway.
Really?
Yeah. He says, "Why does the mere mention of my name cause people to get up in arms in Washington, D.C.? Is it because I believe in God and marriage and morality in our country? Are these things embarrassing to them?" Sorry, Mr. Moore, that is not why they're afraid of you. I'll tell you why they're afraid of you. Because you represent everything the Republican Party wants to hide.
Exactly. He puts it too far out in the front where they don't like that. They like to keep that secret.
Yeah. Anyway, critics of Moore's decision included Alabama's senior senator, which is Senator Richard Shelby. He says Alabama can do better than Roy Moore. And he added, "I don't think it's good for the party nationally. I don't think it would help the president. I don't think it would help anybody running." He's kind of right.
No, he is right. Because like I said, it brings too much out to the foreground where it shouldn't be. Or at least in their opinion, of course.
Yeah, he's exposing the ugly side of Republican Party. Because he is the epitome of what it means to be Republican.
Oh yeah, and that's just the thing. He's not afraid to hide it, which AKA how he became a Potter. But yeah, he's. But what cracks me up is when you were reading how afraid of his morality. I'm like, really, dude?
Yeah, this morality. He is not moral in any sense of the term.
Oh my goodness, whether he's religious Christian or not, just as a person, as a human, he just is not.
No, he's a horrible human being.
Yes.
And even Mitch McConnell had something to say. He says he can do what he wants to do, but we're certainly going to oppose him in every way. Think about this. The most corrupt
right?
Republican politician says, you're so bad, we don't even want you in our party.
That says a lot, actually.
Yeah. It gets worse.
Really?
He's not even getting support from Trump this time.
Wow. The king of them.
Yeah. He said, Trump tweeted last month that Moore can't win and that Republicans cannot allow themselves again to lose a Senate to seat to the great state of Alabama. So here's my problem with what Trump said. He's not backing him because he can't win, right? It has nothing to do with
not
his
because
moral
of what
stances.
His character.
Right, just because he can't win. He doesn't care about his character. Trump only cares about the wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Trump has, that's all he ever cares about, is about winning, being up front in everyone's eye, about the biggest, the best, or whatever words of English he tries to use.
Yeah, and Roy Moore is a three-time loser. And we've covered, I did the numbers, and we've covered Roy Moore more than anyone else.
Actually, I agree completely with that because I actually keep remembering him every time you talk about him. And you know me, my memory kind of stinks. So that says a lot right there, too.
Well, if anybody wants to listen to what we've said about Roy Moore in the past, you can go to episodes 125, 117, 114, 70, 64, 52, 35, and way back in episode 8 where he won his first Mr. Potter Award.
Wow, there's that many.
That's why I call him my arch nemesis.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, he keeps coming up in my newsfeed. And well, now I'm blocked on Twitter, but I can't harass him there.
That's just crazy. And he just keeps on coming. He doesn't stop, which exactly why, the Potter, besides the fact of what he's done, he's just shameless about it. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I'm sure that we're going to talk about him a lot more over the next year and a half. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Stay tuned for more Roy Moore updates.
I was wondering if he does run and he loses it anyways, that means that they lose another seat, which would be a good thing.
Well, it depends on when he loses. So, right now he's just in the primaries, so he could be easily beat by another Republican.
Yeah, true.
And then it would be a Republican versus the sitting senator, Doug Jones. Or no.
Uh-huh.
No, he's going after different Senate seat. So, yeah. I'd have to look up who he's going to be running against.
Yeah. But it's Anyways. Just amazing that he's shameless, actually, about it, if you think
about
it.
Yeah, he is.
Well, yeah, of course he is. That's how he's our Potter that keeps coming around.
All right. That's enough for Roy Moore.
I think so. Well, that'll go away.
Yeah. I have another interesting news story that's going to make you angry.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you know that Latin crosses are now secular symbols if they're old enough?
What?
Yeah, I thought so. The Supreme Court ruled Thursday that a huge concrete cross can stay on public land in suburban Washington, rejecting a claim that its presence is an unconstitutional government endorsement of a religion.
Oh, that's BS.
Yeah. Well, by a 7-2 vote, you were saying?
I was just going to say, so they're basically giving it the granny clause.
Yeah, the grandfather clause. It's actually more how did I want to word this? It is protected by tradition.
Well, a lot of crap. I was going to say something else. A lot of crap was tradition, like slavery. There's one that was tradition. There's all kinds of things that were terrible that were tradition. Doesn't make that right.
Well. By a 7-2 vote, the court said such monuments are essentially historic, not religious, and a ruling that potentially extended problems and protection to hundreds of similar tributes nationwide.
Oh, that's such bull.
Yeah. So the majority decision was written by Justice Alito, and he wrote, With sufficient time, religiously expressive monuments, symbols, and practices can become embedded features in the community's landscape and identity. The cross is undoubtedly a Christian symbol, but that fact should not blind us to everything else that Bladensburg cross has come to represent.
That's unbelievable.
So he admits 100% it's a Christian symbol, but because it's been exactly. there so long, yeah, it now becomes a secular symbol.
That's absolutely absurd. I mean, we had segregation for how long? Should we just keep that too?
Yeah. So here's my issue.
This doesn't even, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So the problem with this logic, if you can call it logic, is that religious and secular are exact opposites. You cannot have a secular religious concept.
Absolutely.
Because secular literally means without religion.
And that's what they're calling this, a secular religious thing?
No, they're saying it's religious, but it has taken on secular meaning.
Okay, then that still doesn't make any sense. You can't say that.
Yeah, that's my point.
I know, but the fact that, and you said this passed, did this pass? I mean, they actually did that? Yeah, 7-2.
The decision came out
with people?
Earlier this week. I don't know, but so now this memorial to World War I soldiers is now a secular religious, it's the same problem we have with In God We Trust.
I'm going to say you still can't say that secular religious, it makes no sense.
Right. It is the most oxymoronic thing you could probably say. It doesn't even make sense. Ugh, so frustrating. Anyways, there were two dissenting opinions, and that was Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor. And Ginsburg wrote the dissenting opinion, and she wrote that the county, in this case, elevates Christianity over faith and religion over non-religion. She even took the unusual step of announcing her dissent from the bench, saying, in World War I and thereafter, the cross was never perceived as an appropriate headstone or memorial for soldiers who did not adhere to Christianity. So one of the arguments they used is that the cross in World War I and forward has been used to mark the graves of heads of soldiers, right? Which isn't true. I mean, you see several other grave markers if you go to old military graveyards.
Uh-huh.
They're not all crosses.
It should have really never been a cross in the first place. It should have just been something that didn't represent anything in that way, you know?
Yeah. Well,
even if you are Christian, it shouldn't have been that way.
So there's so much wrong with this decision. I don't have room to go into everything that's wrong, but I did pick out a few things that really frustrated me and made me angry. So in his, Alito wrote this, the adoption of the cross as the Bladensburg's memorial must be seen in that historical context. Its removal or radical alteration at this date would be seen by many as not as neutral, but as a manifestation of hostility toward religion.
Really?
So if you take that logic forward, right, that if we remove it, it's hostile, then protecting it must be promoting religion.
That's exactly what I got out of that.
Honestly, it should have never been there, so we don't need to be in this situation, but it needs to be removed so that we can get out of the situation.
Right, and by making that statement, that is exactly what that says, is that it's promoting it. I mean, you can't get around that.
Right. I don't know. That's one of the frustrating. But the most frustrating is this one, is that during his decision, during the write up, he's equates the Latin cross to popular commercial crosses like the Red Cross or Bayer Aspirin or anything of that nature, without realizing they are two different types of crosses.
And that's kind of a stretch.
They're seen as two different types of crosses by normal thinking people. You can't equate the Latin cross to the medical cross, basically, is what he's saying.
Well, I remember when our kids were younger, they just thought it was the lowercase T. It looks like to them. It's the lowercase T.
Right, and it does not look like the Red Cross, which is all the arms are equal length and they meet in the middle. So the Latin cross doesn't do any of that. So that's the worst argument that they made during this.
Yeah, that was a pretty thin stretch there.
Yeah, but they still use it. It's one of their points.
Ugh, man. So going backwards. Yes. That's all we're doing is just going backwards.
So it's going to be a long time before we get to fight a fight like this again. And they have essentially ruined any chance of changing anything from this with this one decision.
Yeah. No. Because it's just going to snowball from there out.
Right. You know, basically any cross that was put up before it now will be considered historical.
Right. Uh-huh. That's what they're going to claim. Oh, it's historical. Right. Leave it alone. You can't touch it. It's exactly right. What they're going to do.
And I mean, I wanna know
go
ahead.
I was going to say, you can say that technically anything, you know, from the past, even if it was really awful, should stay because it's historical. There's a difference between keeping something historical versus idolizing it and putting it up. You know what I mean? There's a difference. Yes, things are historical and they need to not be wiped away. But at the same time, you don't need to put up a shrine and idolize it either, you know?
Right. And I want to know how many Christians are willing to say that the Latin cross is secular, that it has no religious meaning.
That's a very good question, because if they stay true, then they should not say that, because that's almost blasphemy. I mean, honestly, it's kind of borderline there a little.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish they would consider that when they made these sort of decisions. And if I remember the dissent right, Ruth Bader Ginsburg made a point about that.
Oh, uh-huh.
But enough of that.
Yeah, enough of that.
Let's go to something, something even more exciting.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So the Altoona, Pennsylvania City Council is considering placing a God We Trust on police cars after a local veterinarian suggested as a remembrance for his friendship with a owner of the dog that killed his dog.
This is just crazy.
Yeah. Last year, he convinced the council to approve the phrase on council chambers to honor his wife getting her citizenship.
Did they actually do that?
Yeah, they did.
Wait, they actually went with him?
Yeah. So it's on the city council walls. Now he's pushing to get it on police cars.
I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, it's a long story, but I'm going to shorten it a bit because there's some stuff to add to it afterwards. So.
Okay.
So Matt Stachmus, I think that's how you say his name, said that he was walking his dog when a Rottweiler darted out from a nearby home and attacked their terrier, taking the small dog's head in its jaws. The Rottweiler's owner, Bill Perkins, came out and tried to help but couldn't. The Stachmus took out his gun and shot the Rottweiler.
Wow.
Yeah. And the terrier did end up dying. So they both lost their dog.
Gosh, that's terrible.
Now it appears, that the two men are close friends, and he thanks God for bringing them together, and he wants the city to put a sticker on the police cars in celebration of that friendship.
Okay, there's a couple things wrong with this, obviously, of course. What the holy hell makes someone think that, oh, great, God killed both our dogs, terribly, by the way, in order for the two of us to get together versus just saying hi because we're neighbors. And then here's another thought. For some oddball reason, we should celebrate this on the side of police cars, because that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. I mean, really?
Yeah, we're talking a guy that convinced city council to celebrate his wife getting citizenship.
That's the other thing that I find really weird. And he's just a citizen. He's not part of the council, correct?
He is not part of the council.
Okay, so is he buying them off? I mean, what's the deal? I have no idea. I don't understand.
No idea.
But, this is weird.
Yeah, the funny thing is, it's not even the most interesting part of this story.
Oh, okay.
Well, everybody knows my other thing that I do, my other passion, is the Original Model Project, right?
Right.
So I sent a letter to the council asking them to consider E Pluribus Unum, as we generally do when we find these things. And this is their response to our letter. And it came from Councilman Dave Butterball when a reporter from the Altoona Mirror asked about the letter. And this is directly from the article that they wrote. He says, Ray is off base in his plea for E Pluribus Unum, according to Butterball. Fred Flintstone can make a better argument to change the model to Yabba Dabba Do. Then he goes on to say that I'm wrong in trying to equate God We Trust with Christianity. There's nothing overtly Christian about it.
But didn't he just say that God brought them together?
Yeah.
I mean, that's right there that by putting in God We Trust on the vehicles means he equates what happened that within God We Trust, because the two go together.
Right.
It's a sign of what happened.
This is a serious hypocrisy with every time I go against In God We Trust and I say, hey, this is a Christian thing. They'll come back and say, it's not about Christianity. You know, it's about God in general. And I'm like, look, I don't know how many of you are actually listening to the things you're saying. All of you are saying, I have faith. I'm a good Christian and I do all these Christian things. We should put In God We Trust up. But you're now telling me that it has nothing to do with Christianity, even though every single reason you want to put it up is Christian.
Right, exactly. They pull this, I mean, like, you could put money down on it how much they pull this. On one hand, they'll tell you it has nothing to do with religion, and then on the same hand, they're going to tell you, you know, the whole religious aspect of it. I'm like, which one is it? You can't have both.
Right, so they'll do things like, it has nothing to do with Christianity, but we're a Christian nation. So which is it?
Now, exactly. With this little thing of trying to, you know, with the E Pluribus Unum and everything, wasn't there a council member or something that was a little more for it, or is that a different story I'm thinking of?
Oh, no, it's the same story. I just didn't get it in here. The city manager is kind of against In God We Trust and would rather have E Pluribus Unum because he sees the reasoning behind it.
Right, because it's more inclusive, out of many, one. Right. I mean, it makes more sense, even if they want to put the English version of it instead of the Latin version. But by having In God We Trust as the national motto, it's just crap. It is not an all-inclusive saying.
Well, I'm trying to figure out is how he equates E Pluribus Unum with Yabba Dabba Doo.
Hell, I think Yabba Dabba Doo would be better.
Probably, than In God We Trust, yeah.
Well, if you think about it, Yabba Dabba Doo... I was going to say, Yabba Dabba Doo just means, you know, it's when something great happens or something good, you're like, yeah, you know, that kind of a thing. It's better than In God, you know, saving my ass, so I trust him.
Right. Well, what bothers me about this is that he's ignoring 175 years of history, right? Actual recorded history where E Pluribus Unum was the de facto motto of the United States and the fact that most of the world still believes that's our motto.
Oh, really? Outside of the United States?
Yeah. And he's basically saying that it's just gibberish words that mean nothing, is what I get from what he says.
Right. I don't get it. The In God We Trust wasn't until more modern history when that showed up, because that is not what they started this country on. That was kind of the whole point of coming over here in the first place, you know?
Right.
Everyone, each to their own, you know?
Yeah, their hypocrisy just drives me insane.
Yes.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
So I've got a new segment. Well, I think it used to be when we had the old show, I'd started a couple of these, but I'm going to try and continue the tradition. And
at least once in a while?
Yeah, just when something really irks me. It's not going to be a regular thing.
Okay.
So I had planned on talking about the Oregon Senate and possibly awarding them a Potter Award for walking out of the session to stop House Bill 2020, a climate change bill that would raise taxes on gas in an effort to curb emissions.
So yeah, sounds I heard like about a
pretty
that.
Good. Yeah, to me it sounded like, oh, we should check into these guys, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the governor has sent state patrol after the rogue senators, and every day they are absent will cost them $500.
Huh.
And at first I thought they were acting like a bunch of petulant children who took their ball and went home.
That's what it sounds like to me.
But then I thought of something, and this may come as a surprise to you and everyone else out there. I agree with them.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't agree with them on the bill. I agree with them on the tactic. And there's a very good reason for that. What they're doing is denying a quorum so a vote can't happen. This is very much like a filibuster in that it can stop a bill in its tracks, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I remembered a similar situation with Wisconsin back in 2011. And in that instance, the governor was refusing to talk to the teaching unions, so the Democrats walked out on the budget proceedings until he agreed to talk to the unions. In the end, the Wisconsin legislators lost, but were hailed as heroes for the people.
Huh.
So we've got both sides of the coin here.
You're right.
So I figured there had to be other instances of this happening. It's like, there can't be only two of them, right?
Right, yeah.
So I did a little digging, and I found some very interesting historical context here. Back in 1839, the Illinois House was meeting in a special session and hatched a plan to vote on a Democratic bill to require the state central bank to make payments in gold or silver. Let me remind you, Democrats back then were not the Democrats of today. Okay.
Right.
Well, the Whig Party strongly opposed the idea and was led by Representative Abraham Lincoln.
Huh.
Well, he decided on the spot that the best way to kill the proposal was to deny the majority Democrats a quorum. So they left the building, the Second Presbyterian Church of Springfield. But two members were required under law back then to demand that a quorum be made. So you have to make a motion for the quorum.
Oh, okay.
So Lincoln and another House Whig, Joseph Gillespie, walked into the chambers and made the motion. No quorum was present and a vote couldn't be taken. The next day, though, Lincoln and the Whigs made the same attempt, but the House Speaker ordered both doors locked behind them and summoned some members who had previously been too ill to attend the session. A quorum was now present.
Huh.
Lincoln realized the problem, and he and the other Whigs jumped out a window to try and halt the vote, but the quorum was already certified and the Whigs lost. According to Lincoln's friend William Herndon, the window jumping had no effect other than to provide Democrats with capital material for ridicule.
Wow.
So this isn't a new thing. And that's what bothers me about it is everyone's reaction to it. I mean, I don't agree with their stance.
Right.
But I do see how the tactic could work in multiple situations, because a lot of times state houses don't allow a filibuster. And this is the only way that the minority party can take action against a bill that they feel is either a horrible bill or will hurt the people or the country in some way.
Right, exactly.
But there's more instances that I found. So okay. In the California Assembly in 1994, when the Assembly was split 40-40 between Democrats and Republicans, the Republican members refused to show up for floor sessions in an effort to prevent Democrats from electing Willie Brown as Speaker with less than a majority vote. Republicans stayed out for several days, but finally relented in January 1995, and the Democrats proceeded to establish a quorum by disqualifying one of the Republicans and elected Brown as a speaker on a 40-39 vote. Again, the jumping out the window basically didn't work.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then in Alabama, 1999, with a Democratic majority, new elected Republican Lieutenant Governor Steve Windham was ex officio president of the Senate at the outset of 1999 session in March. Serving as chair, he forced through a new set of rules that granted him the bulk of the power in the Senate by unanimous consent, refusing to recognize the objections of majority Democrats. The Democrats walked out and denied a quorum for the free period of a week. Once they returned, a series of adjournments was called until Governor Dan Spiegelman convened a special session at which compromise rules were adopted. The balance of power went to President Pro Tem, a Democrat, but the lieutenant governor was given some limited powers of appointment and consultation of the bill assignments. So in this case, it worked.
I was going to say, yeah, this one worked.
Right. And what it did is it kept someone from taking too much power that he wasn't constitutionally allowed to do. And then in Nevada in 1999, in a complicated conflict over privatization of workers' compensation, the entire Republican majority left the chamber in the middle of a night session in anger over a speech by a Democrat. The minority of Democrats who remained in the chamber issued a call of the House. Sergeant-at-Arms was able to round up enough Republicans to make a quorum. Democrats proceeded to pass two bills. Later that day, the Republicans returned, and after a motion to reconsider, two of the Republicans who had been compelled to attend overturned the Senate's actions of those bills. So in this case, it went both ways.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And then in Oregon in 2001, so remember we started this with the Oregon Senate Republicans walking out.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, and in 2001, minority Democrats walked out for 5 days over a dispute over redistricting. The House continued to meet every day in a futile effort to compel the attendance of missing members, but when they were able to do any business for lack of quorum. After Democrats returned to the chamber, the Republican majority eventually passed its redistricting plan, but was vetoed by the governor. Since Democrats knew all along they had the governor on their side, the move was largely symbolic to make a point. And I think that's what these really are. They're not.
Yes.
They're never going to stop the bill, right? I mean, it's very, very rare that it's going to stop. If it's going to pass, it's going to pass. And a lot of times it's just
to make a statement.
To make the statement that needs to be made. And I think that's what the Republicans are doing in this one. They know they've already lost the battle, but they want to make a statement on it. And just voting no isn't enough of a statement.
Right. And I know they had talked about how initially it was to just not be able to vote on it.
Yeah.
By doing the walking out.
Yeah. And you know, these there's others, but I think I've made my point on this. Denying a quorum on controversial votes has long been a tactic used by all sides, all the way back to the invention of democracy.
Right.
So whenever we look at a situation like the one in Oregon, you need to try and remember how we reacted when our side did the exact same thing.
Right. It's once again putting yourself in someone else's shoes. But yeah, it's definitely all about making a statement more than anything, yeah. Truly.
I mean, like I said, I don't necessarily know enough about the bill to know whether I like their opinion on the bill, but you know, it's one of those situations where we need to look at how we would react in the same situation. You know, would we walk out just to make a point?
Yeah. I mean, unless they think that they're going to make a difference or not, but I imagine it's more as a statement than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's pretty much my rant for this time.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, sometimes I come up with good stuff.
Yeah, it's very interesting and not surprising whatsoever as far as it having a history of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, I think that's all the yakking I got for you this week.
I think that's all the yakking I've got.
All right, we'll see you guys hopefully next week.
Next week.
We always like to hear your feedback, so leave us a voicemail at 704-802-YAK or an email at podcast@secularyakking.com.
More input.
All comments are welcome. We like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+.
If you like our show, head over to your podcast directory of choice and leave us a 5-star review. If you really like the show, support the show on our Patreon page.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
And we'll be back next week with more yakking to please your eardrums.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.